TNT News and Talk with Dolores Cahill on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome, everyone, to the Dolores Cahill Show. And my guests today are all from France, and we are discussing the issues with the vaccination and the menstrual cycle. So first, I would like to go to Diane. And I know, Diane, you are a lawyer. And if you would like to introduce yourself and your experience, and then we'll come on to Dr. Alexandra Herrion-Claudet, and then Julie Desmoulier, who has suffered after the vaccination. Thank you, Diane.
Thank you, Dolores. I don't know if I say hi or good evening to everyone. I'm not sure. So please, hi to everyone. My name is Diane Prota. I am a lawyer at the Paris Bar, and I've been challenging in court the COVID legislation since 2 years, since the beginning of all this, from the lockdown to the vaccination today. I've been fighting that. And I have a big concern about side effects of the vaccination, because in my practice, before all this COVID, I was doing cases about for people who became handicapped after accident, for example, a car accident, ski accident, whatever, but also medical accidents. Sometimes you can have a bad outcome after surgery. And I've been working also on cases about when you try a new medicine on someone, therapeutic. Yes. Medicine. I've been working on that point, and I had some alimony for people who did participate in trials for new medication. And this is how I was very, very surprised about the COVID vaccination, that it keeps on going, even though we have all these side effects now that we are seeing, but also when we see the way trials have been done with so few people. Well, it was to be expected when you use this medicine all among the earth that we would have lots of side effects. So I'm kind of terrified about it. I never had so many people phoning to my firm, and especially women who are suffering menstrual problem after the vaccination, because this is how I met Julie, unfortunately, but also how I met some different clients, especially hair hostess, who are suffering also a lot about this type of problem. That I think it's because their work environment maybe gives more make this vaccination harder on them. But this is how I'm working, and I'm very honored and happy to defend Julie and all the we have 15,000 women who are on this are part of this initiative on about testifying on this. But Julie will talk better than me, but so I'm really happy to be and honored to be the lawyer of Julie and all of these other women.
That's very good. So thank you for that and for all the work that you're doing. And maybe we'll just go to Julie Desmoulier now. And Julie, if you want to tell us your background story and what happened to you after the vaccination.
Yes. Hi, everybody. Thank you for welcoming me on the show, Dolores. Last year I was 45 years old. I have a daughter of, she's 12 years old now. So I live in the south of France. I never had any real issues with my period, with my menstrual cycles until the vaccine. So basically I did the second vaccine dose early August. And 10 days later, I experienced very violent pain in my tummy, and it was so painful. Basically, I couldn't walk anymore. I couldn't go to work. I couldn't drive. I couldn't take care of my kid. I couldn't cook her meals, and I really panicked. So I asked my sister to come and pick me up and to take me to the closest gynecologist because I was terrified. And so he gave me an urgent appointment, and he checked me, and he asked if he could have a look. He did a radio of my stomach, and he saw I was having a copper IUD, hormone-free, because I'm hormone intolerant. I cannot take any contraceptive pill.
Okay.
Because I'm allergic to it, so I didn't take any pill for like 20 years. So he told me that the only way to try to make me feel better was to take out the IUD right away. So I said, "Yeah, go on," because it's so painful. I'll do whatever you say. And okay. Then he said that maybe the best thing would be to try the contraceptive pill again, or to put another IUD but with hormones. So this solution was not okay for me. I didn't want to experience my bad experience with this pill when I used to take it. So I was not okay with that. So I asked if I could have a pelvic ultrasound to check if all was good. So he didn't understand my position in the first place. He even take like some kind of paperboard and explain me why it would be nice to give it another try, maybe for 6 months, to see if it would help me with the pain. But I was very firm, and I said, "No, I want a pelvic ultrasound. I feel that something is wrong." So he was not really happy with my position, obviously. And then we found out with the pelvic ultrasound that I was diagnosed with adenomyosis. So I don't know if it's an English word. If you get it, if you
understand. I think it's endometriosis.
Based in my uterus.
It's adenomyosis.
Okay, thank you, Alexander.
So I got this diagnosis. So I freaked out, and of course I couldn't help myself to check on the internet what was about this disease. And every menstrual cycle was so violent, so painful, that I was really scared. So I asked for an appointment to a specialist in Bordeaux, and I wanted to get a second opinion. So I took another appointment in Bayonne, where close to where I live. And the gynecologist specialized in this kind of disease, based in Bordeaux, gave me the same speech as the first gynecologist. She said that I was too young to have hysterectomy. I don't know if it's the English right word. Hysterectomy.
Like, yeah, hysterectomy. Yeah, to have your uterus out, removed.
Yeah, she said that. She feel that the other gynecologist was right. I should give me a chance with some other pills, or maybe try to put another IUD with hormones. But I felt like she was not hearing what I was saying about my fear to experience the very. Basically, I wanted to suicide myself 3 days prior. I was having my menstrual cycles, and right away when I stopped this pill, I was seeing the la vie en rose again when I stopped this hormones, you know. So yeah. I didn't want to take it again, definitely not. And then I asked her if she could give me another medicine, another pill to make me feel better when I was having those violent pains, because I was very scared to be able to learn to live with this pain all my life. And she gave me this medicine called Lamaline. I don't know if it's familiar with you.
And yes, it is.
And Yes, and then I left. I went back home and I ran to get this magic medicine, but obviously it didn't work at all. I was still in very violent pain. And then I went to see two other gynecologists, one in the other hospital, and she was very rude with me, obviously, because she was saying, I won't give you any kind of magic pill to make you feel better if I cannot witness the violence of your pain. So that's not working. Yeah. Yeah. And then I asked her, but I thought you were specialized in hysterectomia and this disease around the uterus. And she was not nice at all. So I asked her if she could give me the name of another specialist in, mm-hmm. in the same hospital. That's when she gave me the name of this other doctor that I saw a couple of weeks later. And I did bring all my file. It was like 20 pages of blood analysis, my pelvic ultrasound, the ones even prior, like from 2017, 2019, I got it all. I have
very good.
I always respected all my appointments to the gynecologist. And I was scared because it was, sorry, I'm going a bit emotional.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Jenny.
So,
and maybe if you just want to take a little break, Julie,
I'm fine. It's important for me to testify what I experienced. And so I was,
it was basically my
very last chance to that somebody would listen to what I feel, you know, in my body and in my mind, because I was starting to feel like I was going to lose it. I would have preferred to die to keep living with this pain.
So the pain was so bad, Julie. Yeah.
So mainly in your abdomen. I will explain you. It was like labor contraction without peridural. Just like if I was only just about to give birth, but like it was night and days. I only had 5 days off a month. I was so scared to lose my job, you know. I was really scared to lose my job. That was very intense for me to experience this situation. And this guy was not very nice in the first place, like his body language and his attitude scared me. But then he looked at all the papers, all the analysis, everything. He looked at me and he went like, what do you want? And I went like, I want a hysterectomy. I don't know if I pronounce it right.
Perfect. Yeah. So this was also a gynecologist, the fourth gynecologist, was it? Yeah.
Exactly. But the I don't know how you say it. It was a chirurgien, a specialist, a gynecologist specialized in operation.
Okay. Yes, surgeon or
surgeon. Yeah, sorry. So I said that's what I want because I don't want to live it. I don't want to experience these pains anymore. That's horrible. Nobody should be living with this constant pain every day or every night, you know.
Absolutely.
And so he looked at me and he went like, if that's your decision, I mean, the disease is there. I can see in your file that it's a severe adenomyosis. So if you like, I can give you this surgery in a couple of weeks if you want. If it's your choice, I'll do it.
Okay.
So that's why I'm emotional, because I remember this day and I felt relieved that somebody would listen to
what
I said and to what I want and respect my freedom to choose what I want for myself and for my body.
Absolutely. Yes.
So then I told him I cannot get this surgery before another month because I was worried about my work. I had some, it was a important period of the year for me with work. So I asked if I could get the surgery a month later instead of a couple of weeks. And yeah. I asked him if he would have any magic solution for me to be able to
survive the next few weeks.
Exactly, with a special pill, because I told him the lamellin was not working properly. It was like if it didn't work. And he went like, of course it doesn't work. You shouldn't take this medicine with a pill. You should take, I don't know if I'm going to pronounce it right, suppository.
Suppository?
No. Yes, so it's a rectal administration of the medicine, by the rectum.
Okay.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. So it was like three per days, and it was like I felt relieved because I don't know, eased the pain like by 60%.
I felt
better 60% thanks to this medicine. So it helped me to psychologically to wait for the surgery. And so I had the surgery mid-December last year. I was very scared that this surgery would be painful or heavy, you know. But it was totally fine. And now I feel like I'm alive again. I'm not moody anymore. I'm not in a very violent pain anymore. I can go to work. I can take care of my kid. I'm a sunshine again. I love life. And
very good.
A survive. I took this decision to be able to survive. So voilà. And all I wanted to say as well is that this pain, this awful pain, started within 10 days after the second shot of the vaccine.
So thank you very much, Julie, for your story. And maybe we'll just come now to Dr. Alexandra Herrian-Caudet, just to give some of the scientific background of what happened to you. And I know, Alexandra, you've been speaking out about the fertility and issues with the menstrual cycle from as early on 2021.
Yeah, correct. Hello, Dolores. Thank you for putting us on board on this so fundamental issue that only concerns, if I may, the only one in two person on Earth, because we are women. And we, as women, whether injected or having problem or not, we should be all concerned by these terrible issues that happen to our female colleagues on Earth. And I think that it's you hear a lot about feminism. It is high time that we as women come together and address this horrible issue ASAP. In a completely united manner, because, as I said again, this is only concerning one in two person on Earth, because we as women are all concerned by what happens to our most internal clock, which is obviously our menstrual cycle. Okay. I shall introduce myself, because many persons don't know me. I like you, Dolores. I'm a scientist. I am a geneticist, and I happen to have sufficient fascination for RNA to make it my own main topic of interest for the last 15 years, meaning that I'm quite passionate on RNA, but meaning I very early on warned the people that those injection of this genetic information of a virus should not be performed, because I knew from scratch that they had never ever been injected to even people who'd suffer from serious diseases like cancer. So the technology was not mature enough to achieve that level. And if people think that I'm a conspirationist and that my talk is rubbish, they should then listen to the CEO of Pfizer, Mr. Bourla, yes, of Pfizer, who gave an interview on March 10th. Of 2022, so this few months ago, and where he says exactly what I'm saying and exactly what I've been saying from scratch, which is that the technology was known not to be mature at all, and so we are just basically doing a complete nonsense in our ethical science, which is to inject people with a product that we know nothing of. So for
I was just going to say that Alexandra, you and Judy Mikovic and myself did a very detailed interview in 2020 before all of these injections were on the market. Do you remember? And described in detail that they should not be injecting the mRNA technology in anyone.
I would go even further, if I may, Dolores. I think we are the very first, you and I, to have warned about this issue with the antibody at a time that nobody knew nothing about it.
Informing
the people that with coronavirus, instead of being neutralizing, they would facilitate the virus. So I do remember well that we were very early on just, and it's not because we are brilliant or because we are, we see in the future, it's just because we work, it's just because we read the literature, and it's just because our see in the future, it's just because we work, it's just because we read the literature, and it's just because our scientific knowledge is so well advanced that we knew everything in advance from the past, from our past experience in science. So because of that, we warn, and we warn extensively. And at one moment, I have to say that I completely switched gears, and instead of fighting that people would try not to get injected too much, I started another fight, another battle, which is the battle to organize the care for all those victims. So now my whole work is really dedicated to find solutions for those victims, because I, like you, Dolores, I did science because we do think that there is always a solution. We just need to work together on it. We just need to get together to bring all our brands together to find solutions. And that's pretty much what I've been doing since November 2021. And the story about this menstrual cycle issues, I've been early in this fight as well, because it was first of all, it happened sequentially. The very first thing was that because they were more advanced in Israel, I was contacted by women there saying, oh my God, I have menstrual cycle issues. I never had them. A little bit like Julie said, my cycle were really regular. Suddenly they started enduring issues. I went onto social network on like Twitter, and on Twitter I was contacted by a lot of women from LGBT trans, and in fact they spoke quite freely about those issues, because we as women, it's a little bit like our menstrual cycles is something a bit
taboo,
dirty, and has to be. It's still like that. I mean, I have to say that.
Yeah.
we shouldn't be laughing at a society that we consider more ancestral. I think we are about on the same page, and I should warn the people, the men, and the society that in fact it is a beautiful clock that we as women have to
That's
be preparing
right.
a little nest in our uterus every month, and whether that nest
for a baby
is invested by a baby or not is something different.
Yes.
But the fact is that it does make us different from the men very substantially. And so in March 2021, there was the first warning in Haaretz, the newspaper in Israel, where they warned about the fact that there were issues on menstrual cycles. So it's not to say that we didn't know, because in February 2021, at least in France, we were only injecting old people. And therefore, we could have stopped and say, oh, no women whatsoever should be injected at this stage, because we are dealing with the most inner part of who they are, which is this clock. And this clock starts as early as in the fetus, because as female, we have our ovaries that are already full of our oocytes when we are born. So it's not like it's something that's going to come with puberty. A little girl has this clock not set up, but already ready to be set up, and has all the equipment. So so that's and just to bring a little substance to Julie's testimony. So yes, we could know in advance by our knowledge in science, because we knew that there are receptors in the ovaries and in the placenta. So we know that for pregnant women or for women, it is a big warning that these injections should not be injected, because we have these receptors to spike. And all the vaccines that were made were producing spike. To give a little substance as well, the testimony of Julie is really important, but as we discussed with her yesterday, her solutions are hers, which is like lamellin is opium, and people should know that it's not, you know, it's not like something, it's not like an aspirin or paracetamol, it is opium. So it is, we are talking of substantial issues with secondary effects, so they should not be.
And also addiction potentially, and adverse events from that as a solution.
Relieved from her pain by lamellin, the fact that it is opium. This Julie. Julie has already children, but a lot of women do not have children yet. And the idea and why you and I, Dolores, are working is to find a way of conserving their uterus. Because obviously, if things went well with her surgery, a great number of surgery with uterus removal is quite harsh. And it is also a dead end for those women who are younger than or not having had children yet. We should be in more a conservative way, but address the issue, because as Julie said, she couldn't stand it. And you can hear from her voice, from her testimony, how brave and how tremendously courageous she is.
Yes, so I just like to acknowledge as well Julie Desmoulier and her braveness, because we know that many, many women from all around the world are too afraid to speak out. And it is really courage to be one of the first ones in her country and around the world. But we just go quickly to an ad break now on tntradio.live. And my guests today are Julian Desmoulier, Diane Protat, and Dr. Alexandra Herrien-Caudet.
Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
This has been an insane week news-wise for me, in my world, in the world of climate, energy, agriculture, and great reset issues. This week, we had multiple things happening at once, and they were the Netherlands protests continuing, with the farmers there protesting the port-mandated net zero emission rules regulated for the nitrogen emissions. And what we're finding out is Netherlands is the second largest food production first, the Europe's largest meat exporter. And this agenda that they're pushing is literally going to dismantle, bankrupt, and close down small family-run farms that have been in existence for generations and families. And this is happening to the country that's responsible for the most meat exports.
The Mark Morano Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
Remember when they told us that the last presidential election was the most secure election in history?
Well, they lied to you and the rest of the world. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Dolores Cahill Show on TNT Radio. And my guests today are all related to adverse events associated with the injections. And they include Julie Desmoulier, who had severe adverse events, including related to abdominal pain after the injection of the vaccine. And Dr. Alexandra Herrien-Claudet in France, who's a scientist and an expert in mRNA technology for many years. But we'll just go to the lawyer, Diane Protat, who has been very bravely defending many of the women who have adverse events.
I just wanted to add something after listening to Alexandra. We have to remember that in France, at the beginning of the vaccination, the Minister of Health, who is a doctor in France, he's a neurologist, his name was Olivier Véran. At the beginning of it, he knew there were problems with menstrual bleeding because he said to the woman, don't worry, we know that you can be affected by this kind of problem, but don't worry, ladies, your period will come back next month. It's just a little thing. He said that on the radio, on the TV, he said that to everyone. And as the Ministry of Health, he gave the jab during in front of television to a pregnant woman who was is a Secretary of State or something like that. It was direct on television. He, as a Minister of State, vaccinated pregnant woman. This is awful, and he knew that there was supposedly a problem. And we all need to, under a law point of view, the problem is the to be cautious. The medicine should be cautious. It's the first principle. And in my opinion, as a lawyer, I have seen lots of side effects of medication, but I've never seen a medication who stopped menstrual bleeding. I'm not a doctor. I think it never happened. I'm a woman also. I've never experienced that. So my first thinking was it was not normal. And when I started to defend people, it was something I was saying on French television or radio. I don't understand how come we can vaccinate all the humanity, half of the humanity are women, and knew that maybe only, but just thinking that all of the women on earth doesn't have their period for only 1 month. Can you imagine how big it is? And just that for me was something absolutely unnormal, not with no caution. And I think he's reliable and responsible for that. And also as a lawyer, I wanted to say about that. At the beginning, the hostess that I am representing, who joined forces with the initiative of Melody and Julie, Where Is My Period? Some hostess that I'm representing went to join this initiative because they were, when we were asking the Supreme Court to stop the vaccination for the pilot, the steward, and the hostess, they were testifying under the law, under oath, that they had bleeding and bleeding and bleeding and bleeding, and lost, and some of them lost their uterus, as Julie did. They had one of them, she had to say, announced us in front of the Senate, that she had to choose between her uterus and her job. She is a mother, she needs to win. And me, I was very shocked to read last November all this testimony of our test of us. Bleeding, well, it's not normal and something we, as a woman, we never face. So I hope now in the French newspaper, everybody is talking about that, but they said it's not that big a deal. Like the Ministry of Health, it's not that big. It is a big deal because 1 year after,
it's a huge
this
deal.
Is not coming on. This is what I wanted to add, because as Alexandra said, they knew because they were talking about it, and this is absolutely abnormal to have promised people that this will not affect their life. Julie's life was so much affected. So this is a lie in front of all the women of the world.
And maybe, Diane, if you just wanted to talk from your lawyer's perspective around the liability, and also around how you managed to get 15,000 women to come together.
Well, thank you. I didn't manage to make them all together. It's Melody and Julie who did. As a lawyer, I started this as I was talking, because I'm very proud of the Freedom Flyer in France. We have Aussie Freedom Flyer. We have Canadian Free to Fly. We have the Airliners for Humanity in Switzerland. We have joined all the forces. And one of the hostess, the one who lost her uterus, who testified in front of the French Senate, she talked to me about this initiative launched by Melody Ferron, who was gathering on Instagram all these testimonies, and this hostess went to testify that, and so we joined together. And I think the testimony of the hostess that now are testifying from all around Europe and everywhere help although this initiative, and we all get along, and we had this same signal of alert about women. And at one point in February, the French Senate decided to have an inquiry about side effects. Well, they didn't really decide it. They had 30,000 French citizens asking for that. And normally the Senate can open this inquiry after 100,000 citizens are asking, but they decided to do it after 30,000 citizens. And I hope with this initiative that citizens from all over the world, they will, and especially in Europe, now that they know we did that in France, that they will ask their parliament to do the same. So in February, this inquiry was launched. And I said to the woman, where is my period? And also to the Freedom Flyer, do you want me? We will ask to participate, to be heard, because you have the trial we can make in front of courts. But as you've seen, medicine is not caution anymore. And justice has failed us, has failed everyone. This is not justice anymore to force people to get the jab or lose their job. This is a crazy justice, in my opinion. So I said, what is important is also to make people know about it and to make our politicians know about it, because they are the ones passing this awful law. So we asked to participate, and the French Senate said yes to us. So the people who were in charge, these politicians, these senators, were in charge of the hearing. Three of them were also doctors. One of them was a pediatrician, the other one was a generalist doctor, and the third one was a senator, but before she was a medicine for workers. So they knew what they were talking about. And during this hearing, well, Melody, who is the who launched this initiative, was interviewed and read all the testimonies. But what we did also, I asked all these women who did testify anonymously on the internet to change their testimony and make this testimony, written testimony, under oath, and to send it to the Senate. At one point, I had an email from the Senate saying, please stop sending us. We have too much. And this idea of it, so everybody can listen to it. Thank you for that. Because, for example, in Israel, it's called testimony in the Testimony Project. The idea of it was that, first of all, the pharmacovigilance, the state said to, and especially the doctor, excuse me, said to the woman, well, yeah, there is no link, so I won't make an alert. So if people don't want to speak, it's like people don't want to know. There is a will not to know. And what I said to help all these women, like Julie, when the doctors didn't want to make the link, I say, doctor, don't want to make the link, but we will do it because we will not go through these assessments of pharmacovigilance. We will make our own testimony, as in a divorce, as in any other case, as in a murder, as ever. And they were overwhelmed by all these testimonies, and now I hope everywhere in health they will do it, because this is the only way to make it. And I don't want to be too long, but after that the French Senate did give a report, and in this report they said that the balance benefit and risk should be reassessed for some part of the population, especially pregnant women and children, and in my opinion also for pilots, but this is my opinion. But they had something that is very, very, very important, and we should be thankful to Melody and Julie, because, and also to this hostess who had the same problem of Julie, who was really brave to testify in front of the Senate, and I have other hostess who testify in front of the European Parliament about that. But they said that they were surprised by the amount of women who were suffering, and they said it's abnormal that these side effects has not been yet recognized in France. And the French Senate said we have to put this question into the hand of the European Medical Agency. And the European Medical Agency is not acting right now. So what we will do with all the women from France, from Where Is My Period, but I hope with all the women that are joining us now in Belgium, in Switzerland, everywhere, we will ask the European Medication Agency to gather once more and to give us and to make public hearing. Also, this is very important, because if we let these doctors gathered secretly, nobody can participate. And what is very important is for us to be there. So we want to challenge this problem in front of the European Union. And this is what is putting in place. I know everyone has his own history, has his own needs to find a therapy for each one. We cannot defend all these women individually, because this is too hard. But what we are doing with this initiative is, all together, we want to stop the administration of the fourth dose, because I think the first step to recovery for women is to stop giving the jab. This is my opinion. This is what we do. Absolutely. With this initiative with Julie and Melody.
Yes.
And the help of Alexandra also, of course.
Yes, what all of us what are doing is to prevent future harm, you know, so that women who are not injected and are not aware of these issues, that they don't then take the injection. But maybe just to say as well that I was nominated by Ireland to be in the Innovative Medicines Initiative, and there was an observer there from the European Medicines Agency. And in January, February and March of 2020, I was saying there was no need to call this pandemic at all. And they already were having a call for mRNA vaccines before, you know, in January, February, March. And then I was asked to resign from the Innovative Medicines Institute because I was raising issues, you know, in January, February of 2020. And I said that I would debate anyone within the European Parliament or any institutions, and I would take full responsibility for the decision. And I was asked to resign. They didn't offer me any opportunity to debate me. And then they just, you know, kicked me out of the Innovative Medicines Initiative. But the European Medicines Agency were observers on that committee, and they also didn't contact me or respond. So I think we need to be aware to not rely on institutions that have not actually facilitated investigations into adverse events. But Alexandra, you wanted to comment?
Yeah, in fact, what Jan talked about is the. I would like to cast light on the initiative and the action of Melody and Julie, because I think they are very important, and they made a fantastic job. To my knowledge, but Julie will speak better about it, they coined the good hashtag, which was Où est mon cycle? Où est mon cycle? Where is my period? and it aggregated immediately a great number of women who were concerned by the issue. The second thing that I know they did, because I got involved in it because I thought it was great, they printed a little flyer as to saying, do you have any menstrual issues? Contact us. Because basically what happens is that women get their menstrual issues, but they don't connect it to the vaccine. Obviously, you know, it's quite hard to make the connection. And so they just think, oh, well, what's going on? I don't really know. So the flyer, I put it on cars. I gave it to people in, you know, when you go to a shop, any shop, you give it to the cashier, and suddenly you open the communication.
Conversation.
And each time the conversation, the terrifying thing is that each time I gave it to a cashier or someone in a shop, she immediately witnessed that she knew of problems around her or herself, just to give an insight as to the issue we're raising at the moment. And to go further than that, so those kind of flyers do open up the language, do open up the communication, and it was a great success of Melody and Julie, and they are putting tremendous effort because they have a job, they have children, they have, you know, to add up all these things, and they do it for the sake of women. So really my tribute to them, joining Diane's tribute to them. The thing I wanted to say as well is that when we discussed about the timing of occurrence of these issues, Julie told me she believed it was about 10 days after she got the second jab. This is very important because, once again, through science, we may have a clear explanation for what's going on. The reason being that if it takes place between 10 to 15 days after an injection, what happens in this window? It's a window of opportunity, of bad opportunity in your body, which is that you are given the gene instruction of producing a spike protein. In the lack of possibility of your own body to realize that they are facing an intrusion of something that they should be fighting against, which is why I've constantly said it is not like a vaccination, because a vaccination, at the moment you get injected, your body immediately understands that there is a foreign intrusion and starts building its the antibodies. Whereas in this injection, the gene injection, you have this window between 10 to 15 days. Between these 10 to 15 days, what happens? You're producing spike. Without your body understanding that it is not a protein of yours, it is a protein of virus. So this is the issue, and you don't have the antibody to start fighting. Then, so in that windows of opportunity, what happens is that a lot of people, and when I say a lot, I have the number from the Ministry of Health of Israel, it is 11% altogether in the first 2 weeks that become COVID positive. So when I see that they are stressing the people about being COVID positive in pregnancy, people should be warned that 11%, which is extremely high, which is a rate that has never been achieved, even when the epidemic was the highest rate, they become positive. So if they don't want to take the risk of becoming positive, please do not get injected. So that's the first window. Then what happens in 10 to 15 days? You start having your own antibodies. And those antibodies will fight against the spike. And what happens is that because the spike is at your ovaries, it may well be that there is some kind of, let's say, to simplify it, autoimmune reaction, which is self-destructing, and where you have this issue of whether thrombosis, so blocking the circulation, or on the contrary, hemorrhage, which is actually the same mechanism. And Doctors for Ethics, we put letters to explain it very early on as well. So this is to get, you know, to for the people to have an explanation. And the last thing I want to say is what are the numbers we have as to the issue we are facing. The numbers we currently have are between 10% of the women injected to 40% of the women injected. That's from a scientific article that was just published. So the range is here. 10% was given by the Ministry of Health of Israel as an official number. 40% is being given by the only article that relieved and numbered figure as to this issue. So this is just how critical. And when our French Ministry of Health says, oh, don't worry, period will come back. Now, the women who have faced this issue know that unfortunately, maybe they come back, but somehow in a chronic manner, the issue comes back as well. So it's not like, oh, no problem. You know, it was just one or two cycles that you lose and that everything is coming back to get all together. The issue is, why would you skip one or two cycles? And then do you have the chronic issue? And then we have to find solutions, and we are gathering solutions, and I hope we have the time to discuss about it, Dolores. Bye.
Yes, very good. Thank you, Alexandra. That's really important for, you know, people listening to this, that if we understand potentially the mechanism, that could potentially be a way that we can treat this or try and recover women from this. But Julie, I'd be very happy if you want to come in and follow on from Alexandra, and also maybe to discuss how you came to set up the webpage and set up this amazing initiative.
Yes, so actually I did not set up the Instagram page. Melody did. So we should give her a tribute because she did an amazing job. She does an amazing job. It's well, it's crazy. Just like Alexandra said, we do have our proper job. We have our kids. We you know, it's not so easy, but we are so passionate. You know, it's very important for us to make all these women come together and to give them the opportunity to raise their voice. You know, on this Instagram page. So it is named basically @. If you search for it in the toolbar, vaccine_menstrual. So the problem is that we are very shadow banned. So you need to scroll down, even if you cannot see the page, you need to scroll down and push it and you find it. So how I did meet Melody, I had the surgery mid-December last year, basically, and early January, I had the curiosity to type in the toolbar Instagram page vaccine side effects, and that's how I found this page. So I thought, I think by that time, she probably already posted like 100 testimonies on the webpage. So I thought I should also share what happened to me. And then we started to talk, you know, and to get to know each other. And she asked me if I would like to be part of this this webpage, and if I was okay to give her a hand, you know, because she was getting so much testimonies. It was very hard to cope with, you know, you need to find the time to tape the testimonies, to post them, it's a lot of work. So I was, of course, right away, I said, yes, I mean, you know, I want to help you, you know, I would love to give you a hand, you know. And then I think today she posted like something like 400 testimonies, but she received so much, like on Messenger, on emails, on Instagram, on Facebook. She keep apologizing to everybody on the medias because we are so busy. You know, we are only like, I think, 10 girls to help Melody today. But it's very hard because I think she said that she's pretty late in posting all these testimonies. I think she has like 5,000 testimonies, and yes, it's hard because
a lot of these. One of the things that we need to do is to try and help organizations. So maybe we can talk about that as the solution in the next hour for all of you who have done this amazing work in the last year or two of how you can be supported. But on the Dolores Cahill Show, I'd just like to thank my guests, Julie Desmalier, Diane Protat, and Dr. Alexandra Herrion-Caudet. And we're just going to go to a break at the top of the hour on TNTradio.live.